Welcome back to another episode of the Front Page Football Podcast. We are back again, and today we are reviewing round three of the A-League men's competition, looking ahead to round four, and I am joined tonight by some usual contributors, guests on the Front Page Football Podcast in Jake Hollab and Matt Olson. Before I throw and do the introductions with Jake and Matt, I wanted to mention right at the start of the podcast, we do have Front Page Dub coming back in a couple of weeks soon. So if you're looking for more specific A-League women's content, Cody Ajayda, Matt Olson, Matt, of course, is with me tonight. They'll be on that. There'll be two episodes this month of Front Page Dub every fortnight, of course, that is released during the season. So just letting you know, that'll be back. That's why we won't talk about the dub in this podcast. Be saved for Cody and Matt in that podcast. Matt, whilst we're on the topic, how are we? How was our weekend?
Yeah, good afternoon. Good evening. Happy.
No, it's actually late enough now that it's nighttime in WA, not afternoon.
Yeah, just barely, isn't it? Being 15 hours behind or however far the time difference is. Anyways, I think you asked me a question and the answer is yeah. Good. Okay.
Okay, awesome. Thanks for contributing to the discussion. Actually, or are you actually doing me a solid here, because we've got quite a bit to get through here at the start of the pod and cutting down on the intros. That's brilliant. Well done, Matt. Excellent. Jake, joining us, Melbourne Cup Day, mate. Joining us from Victoria. And how was your Melbourne Cup? I don't really care, but how was it? I'll ask anyway.
Yeah, look, it was good, but now I'm knackered. It's currently, as we're recording, 9:44 p.m. After a big day. So, look, I'm knackered, but the thought of talking about Australian football is waking me up. It's like a hot shot of coffee flowing like through adrenaline. My bones right now. It is pumping right now. I am so excited. That's what I am. Thank
adrenaline,
you.
That's what gets me through my hectic schedule pretty much every day. So, yeah, and that's how we do it here on the Front Page Football Podcast. Ridiculous recording times because we're disorganized. Anyway, let's... Let's start with what's happened, like we do in every single podcast, what's happened in the previous week in the world of Australian football. So just a quick recap of the results in the A-League men and women in case you missed them over the weekend. Round three of the A-League men started on Friday night. Sydney FC getting a 3-2 win at Suncorp Stadium against the Brisbane Roar. Auckland took out the first ever Kiwi Classico 2-0 win over Wellington at Sky Stadium. The Mariners and Perth, stalemate, nil all on Saturday. And Saturday night, Adelaide United securing a crazy 4-3 win away from home against the Wanderers at CommBank Stadium. On Sunday, Melbourne Victory came from behind to beat MacArthur 2-1 in an Australia Cup final rematch. And last night, the round was concluded with Western United going down 1-0 to Melbourne City in what was attempted to be promoted as a derby, even though it's not. Anyway, so those were the results from round three in the A-League men's. The A-League women, round one, started on the weekend, started with Western United beating Wellington 4-2 in Tarni in a crazy game on Friday night. The Mariners shocked Sydney FC 3-1 on the first game on Saturday. Canberra United, who I mentioned last week, a potential surprise team for me, and they've already got off to a fantastic start. Shout out to Maya Markovsky, the GOAT, who is my signing of the season and got off to a great start already. 3-2 win against Brisbane for Canberra United. At the same time, Adelaide United went down 3-2 to Melbourne Victory in the original rivalry. There was a crazy game on Sunday. Perth Glory 2-0 up, went down 5-2 to Melbourne City. Matt, we won't talk too much about that, I don't think. And the final game of the weekend, Newcastle and the Wanderers drawing 2-2. Newcastle coming from 2-0 down in that one to draw 2-2. That round one of the A-League women, the most goals ever scored in a six-match round of A-League's football in the men or women. Far more entertaining than the men's. That's for sure, because these last couple of rounds on the men's, yeah, have not been the best, to be honest. But we're going to talk about that later. We are going to get into a little bit of a segment later to talk about the first kind of where we're sitting, I guess, in the first three rounds of the A-League men. Some other results. Of course, our last pod we recorded last Monday night. And on the Tuesday morning, the Matildas defeated Germany 2-1. It's their first win over Germany in 19 years. And some other things from the game as well. Of course, Kyra Cooney-Cross with an incredible goal. Her first international goal. Also a first international goal for Claire Hunt, the winner. Cooney-Cross making her 50th appearance. Well done to her. And a shout-out to Winona Heatley as well, who became cap number 230. By making her Matilda's debut as well. And we've just, all three of us here, I think, I'm not sure if Matt watched it, but me and Jake were watching the Mariners just drew 2-2 with Shanghai Shenhua in the ACL Elite coming from 2-0 down. So well done to the Mariners on getting a result, stemming a bit of the bleeding that they've had in the ACL Elite. We've got Sydney FC taking on Hiroshima. Sanfrecce Hiroshima, not just Hiroshima, on Thursday night in the Asian Champions League 2 as well. Jake, Mariners, what do you reckon? Good result there, deserved point?
Yeah, I'd probably say it deserved at least the end. It was a bit of a weird game. The Mariners like created a lot of chances, especially from set pieces, but they just wasn't going in. Like, it just simply, the ball just was not going in. I know there was one that hit the post, one that would just go slightly there, one that went straight to the keeper. It was crazy. But yeah, I think it was a goal from Sabanyor just out of nothing. Great to see him score. And yeah, the youngster Bailey Brantman grabbed the late equaliser. So yeah, two players off the bench there that, yeah, hopefully we'll be pushing for more minutes throughout the season. So it was good to at least see them grab a point there, because they really, really need at least a 1 point from that.
Yeah, definitely. And pretty awesome to see someone like Sabit Noor, who was only playing NPL football a couple months ago, scoring in the Asian Champions League. Very, very cool. Elsewhere in the A-League men, a couple of news items from the week as well. We actually want to give a shout-out to the number six GOAT, Alex Rufer. Made his 150th appearance for Wellington, actually in the derby, and it looked for a while last week that he wasn't going to play, and then he ended up playing, so well done to him. Josh Oluwayemi is an awkward one, because he signed a one-year extension during the week with Wellington, so he wanted to mention that, but he started that celebratory news not in the best way, giving away what ultimately was the winner for Auckland in the derby, but good for him to extend with Wellington. Seems very much at home there. I'm sure he's going to get better. And Nathan Walker also signed a new four-year deal with Wellington too. Some other news was an interesting one, actually. Craig Noon, who's been in charge of MacArthur's Academy program for the last couple of seasons, I believe, but he's actually left that role as MacArthur's Academy coach, Bulls Academy. They almost got promoted to the NPL in New South Wales this season as well. So interesting one there. In the A-League Women. Now, I said last week when we did the preview, I've actually said this the last couple of weeks, like, oh, you know, surely I think most of the squads are kind of settled now, but no. You've got clubs announcing signings the week of the season starting. So we even had a situation, Melbourne City's new signing, whose name is escaping me. She scored 2 goals on the weekend. Matt, the Canadian, whose name is escaping me. Jeez. Come on, gotta remind myself here. But she was announced. Gonna get it right now. Here we go. Catherine Harvey. Yeah, Catherine Harvey. She was announced.
She's got it up.
Yes. I do have my laptop. I do search things during the podcast, just for anyone listening. And Catherine Harvey was like announced like the week of, I think she hadn't been in Australia for a week, and now it's like the week of the first game against Perth, and then scored 2 goals. So kind of makes things a little bit annoying for podcast planning like this. But the Jets announced the signing, American striker Gia Vicari from the Danish side at Denser. She wasn't in the squad on the weekend, so we'll see if she features this weekend. And also with your girls, Matt, Perth Glory, some news. Susan Fonsonkamp, going to miss 3 to 4 months. That's a big blow. She obviously, particularly last season at the start of the year, got off to a fantastic start. She's got a bit of an ankle injury, but they've signed an injury replacement in Morgan Roberts, also coming out of the NPL in New South Wales. Stephen Peters continuing the trend there. And the Wanderers also announced a couple of signings. They announced actually a bunch of scholarship deals last week for their women's side. A couple who are yet to feature are Sienna Arate and defender Maya Lobo. So let's see if they feature this weekend. All right, let's move through things a bit. Aussies abroad, there's quite a bit here from the weekend and the past week, even going back to last week during the week. But first place we have to start, we're going to start with actually some coaches and a massive shout out to Kevin Muscat for leading Shanghai Port to the Chinese Super League title for 2024. They pipped Shanghai Shenhua on the final day, and along with the Aussies on his coaching staff as well, Ross Aloisi, Vincenzo Irado, Irarado. Jesus Christ, how the hell am I getting this wrong? I'm Italian. What the hell? Come on, man. And also a big shout out to the head of higher performance as well, who's Australian as well, and Greg King. He actually used to be at Adelaide United. And I think another A-League setup, which is escaping me right now too. But another A-League's alumni, I guess they're being successful overseas. Ange Postecoglou into the League Cup quarterfinals with Spurs. And there was a bit of a coming of Ange ball performance on the weekend too, with Spurs beating Villa 4-1. That was great from my perspective for Ange. Not so great to see Spurs win 4-1. But look, you know, I do want Ange to do well. So excellent, excellent result for him there. And probably the most underrated story here, and what has been fantastic to witness, is Dario Vidicic with Brighton women's team is off to a fantastic start. They are third on the table right now in the WSL in England, only 3 points off top after six games. I think Man City are top at the moment. And Dario also was named the manager of the month for October in the WSL too. So absolutely awesome to see that. Moving on to some goal contributions from the past week. Mohamed Touré, there's been a bit of buzz for him at the moment. Some Socceroos buzz as well. He's on absolute fire at the moment at Randers in Denmark. He's got two goals and three assists across his past three games. One goal and an assist, a goal and an assist at the weekend as well. I think they won 4-1 in the end. So fantastic to see Mo in some really good form. Aidan O'Neill scored an extra time winner for Standard Liège in the Belgian Cup, the round of 32. So well done to Aiden. Some goals as well recently. Here's a couple names which people have forgotten. Tommy and Denny Juric, who are both at the same club in Slovenia, FC Koper. And weirdly, it seems like one of them starts and one of them's on the bench. Sometimes they actually sub on for each other, I've noticed, the Juric boys. So, but they've actually each got a goal recently, and looks like they're finding some form there. So that's good to see. John Iredale as well. Goals in back-to-back games for Aalborg in Denmark. Nestor Iringunda scored within, I think, 2 minutes of coming off the bench for Bayern's reserves in the German fourth tier over the weekend. Lewis Miller, I don't know what's going on with Lewis Miller, but ever since he scored against China, it's like now he's like, I can score Lewis Miller, because he scored for Hibs against Dundee in a draw over the weekend too. And probably the most significant one here is that Jackson Irvine getting two assists in St. Pauli's Bundesliga win over Hoffenheim, 2-0. They won over the weekend. Fantastic to see Jackson have that sort of impact in the Bundesliga. Last one I wanted to mention here, Josh Laws, who you might remember was once upon a time the Wellington Phoenix before he went overseas to join Grasshopper in Switzerland. He's actually departed Grasshopper and is now a free agent. And I think there was some buzz out there. Here's one actually, Jake, because Trent Sainsbury is still not going to be back like to the new year. I think some people have floated out there, like, should the Mariners look at someone like Josh Laws, you know, as some defensive cover? Maybe just a word on that. And anything else there that caught your eye from the Aussies abroad wrap?
Yeah, I think Laws actually could be an interesting one. I thought he was a pretty solid player for Wellington Phoenix. I thought he actually, from what I could sort of see at least, he was actually doing relatively well at Grasshoppers when he had a chance. But yeah, not sure sort of what happened there to make him leave, but that could be interesting. And I think the one that probably really stuck out to me probably is Mo Touré, how well he's done with Randers. You know, the Socceroos are really crying out for sort of someone to really grab that starting striker role for the team. So, you know, maybe one there that could get an option or an opportunity at least.
Okay, Matt's shaking his head to the Motore stuff, and I just need to get a line from Matt on why he's shaking
it's
his
not
head.
having it.
Scummy club.
Okay, there's some Danish, because obviously people unaware. Obviously Matt Olsen, he's got some Danish background, and there's some emotion here. Would you like to explain further, or?
So my family are from Sjælland. Randers is in Jutland, but you're forgetting that Randers are the club that betrayed Mustiamini.
Oh,
there we go. Shat on his fucking kit. Yeah, right.
Interesting.
Okay, it's very personal. It's very personal. All right.
Paul Izzo also plays there too.
Yeah, Paul Izzo also plays there. So you've got an issue with Paul Izzo.
They have a history of... Jack Duncan was there for a bit. Jack Duncan only has. Yeah.
Was Zach Duncan?
No, Jack Duncan, the goalkeeper.
Was Zach Duncan also there for a bit? Or
AGF.
He was
AGF, the direct rival that Musti is a club legend of. So they're in the same area of Jutland, which is why they're such big rivals. But... Jack Duncan, fun fact, I can't believe this is where this is going, and we'll wrap up in a second, but Jack Duncan has a 100% clean sheet rate in the Superliga, because I think he played one or two games and got a clean sheet in those one or two games for Randers. Fun fact.
The GOAT.
So do we look back at Jack Duncan's career? Failed wonder kid? Question mark. Failed Aussie prodigy? Question mark. Don't know.
He's not a well victory right now.
He's done all right with victory.
Pretty well. Yeah.
All right. Good on him. Some other news, of course. We all three of us were actually on the FPF TV stream on the weekend. We had a bit of discussion after the Kiwi Classico about the national second tier, but of course that will be launching in October 2025. If you want to go hear me rant about the national second division and the discourse around it, then you can go and check out the FPF TV stream on YouTube or through our Facebook. I'm not going to go over some of those points again here. Ellie Carpenter, congratulations to her. She was named the inaugural winner of the Women's AFC Asian International Player of the Year Award. Jesus, that's a mouthful. But well done to Ellie, continuing to accumulate the achievements. The Matilda, she has had a fantastic, fantastic career. And also, here's one. Young Socceroos accept an invitation to participate in the China Panda Cup during the upcoming November international window. Matt Olsen again is giving me faces. Matt, why don't you give us one line on the China Panda Cup, whatever, just a bizarre name, to be honest with you, before we go to a break.
Football Australia has just unleashed Daniel Benny and Abdul Faisal in the same 11 for an invitational tournament.
Yes, so Matt, extremely excited for Daniel Benny and Abdul Faisal being in the same squad at international youth level.
It's an interesting one, though, because I feel like this is a very bizarre kind of tournament for that team to come together for. To be honest, I don't even really know why they didn't try to go back to Europe or do something like that. They've had a lot of good experiments playing in, like, even like Qatar and Saudi and... and then they had a tour to Switzerland recently. So this is just bizarre to play like an invitational tournament with teams that we could be facing at the Asian Cup. But fair play. Looking forward to it.
All right. Let's take a quick break because the opening section, as usual, was dragged on for too long. And when we come back, we're going to talk about round three of the A-League Men's. And we've got a little bit of a segment planned as well. Okay, so round three of the A-League men's competition. We are going to go around now and do our biggest takeaway from round three. One thing that has stuck with us from round three, maybe you guys have thought of something from watching a certain game or the last couple of days, thinking about maybe a selection of games, something that you noticed. But I'll just start this. I think I'll get into my takeaway soon, but yeah, interesting round, interesting couple of rounds. I haven't liked a lot of the football, to be honest with you. There's been a lot of dead kind of bad games, to be honest with you, in these last couple of weeks in particular, but there's been some good games. So Jake, why don't you start? What's your biggest takeaway from round three?
Yes, so for me, I think maybe slightly obvious, probably one of the most talked about teams at the moment. It's Auckland FC. They've had a ridiculously good start. if you sort of go back to the predictions we sort of all made, I think I had him around seventh. You might have had him around sixth. And it was just generally, we're just sort of unsure what to expect in this team. Obviously, they have a really, really good squad, and we've seen them sort of prove themselves to be such a good squad throughout this season. But I guess we just weren't sure how they were going to play, how they're going to manage games, whatnot. Obviously, even Steve Carrick, like how he was going to, coach this team. But yeah, I think that like they've just at least proven they're just going to be a tough team to beat. Like, yes, it's only been three games, and you can say, they've had relatively good sort of fixtures. Obviously, the first two games against Brisbane, Sydney, at home in front of their sort of new, very excited fans. So that's always going to be a bit of a bounce there, but still, I think still very solid performances there. And most importantly, we've got the results. And yeah, against Wellington, who are notoriously hard to beat. They're such a hard team to beat and simply just get points off. To go to their home, secure a 2-0 win. Yeah, it wasn't the prettiest game, but look, at the end of the day, they're walking away with the points. They're 9 points out of 9, top of the league. So literally perfect start for Auckland. And yeah, I'm just really interested to see where they go from now. Because yeah, obviously it's first three games, but there'll be more tests to come, especially when they go across to Australia, sort of see how they play there. But what a start.
Yeah, so we were talking about this on the stream, I think, on the weekend, but Auckland
Yeah.
don't play. So they don't play until the 24th again in the league against Macarthur in Unite round. I guess technically that's an away game because Macarthur in New South Wales, it's like, I guess, a home game for them, but it's not a Campbelltown, so it's not really a Macarthur home game. So really, if you're looking at when their true proper away game is, first one, it's not to the 15th of December against Melbourne City, I believe. So, wow, the schedule's really worked out for them, and they made things easier by, of course, winning the first three games and not conceding. Well, let's look specifically at the game, the derby on the weekend. So, although I think Auckland have been a bit more conservative, particularly maybe more conservative than what we saw, like Steve Corriger as Sydney FC head coach, not as aggressive off the ball. But I think on Saturday they did a really good job with their pressing. I think that was probably one of the main aspects of the performance. They and obviously led to the first goal with Brimmer. But just generally, I think they caught Wellington out quite a few times. They didn't allow Wellington to play through them a lot. There were a few times they did, and Wellington actually did create quite a few chances. I mean, Ishige had two big chances in the second half. Definitely, there was the header. There was another one off the top of my head, for sure, which I'm forgetting what exactly it was. But he definitely had two chances in the second half. And yeah, at the end of the day, though, you look at the statistics from the game. Possession was quite even. Okay, Auckland won't really care about that. They had a lot more shots. I think it was weird because I watched Italiano after the game, his press conference, and I think he was fair in saying, like, I don't think Auckland really, like, got in behind Wellington or really broke down Wellington in the game. It wasn't, we spoke about this on the stream about how it wasn't really a dominant performance, right? But they do seem, you can be a team that's more dominant, or you can be a team that's less dominant, but just gets the job done and gets results. So I think what we've seen over the first three games is that they are the latter of those two teams. I'm just wondering whether they can sustain this, and particularly away from home is the main thing. Matt, what was your thoughts on the derby, really, and particularly Auckland's performance?
Look, I think it's it kind of reminds me that with Stephen Corriger, you still have a coach that is going to be able to set his teams up for a method of success, and put the right structures in place to the point where his team on paper is a team that's going to know what they're doing and be consistent. And I think when we look at Auckland, I think it's not so much success that we're talking about as much as it is that keyword consistency. And I think that the culmination of what they've kind of put together and how they kind of aimed to exploit Wellington, it worked in the sense that they definitely had more on the ball. They were creating a fair amount of shots and chances and things like that. But ultimately, it was luck that kind of won them the game through Olamide Yemi's mistake. The second goal, okay, it was actually, I think, a byproduct of the kind of atmosphere that was surrounding that 6 or 7 minutes of the play out thereafter, because I don't think a finish that seamless for Brimmer, would have occurred had Wellington just been a bit more switched on. And in that respect, I just think that what we're getting with Auckland is just enough consistency where they can perform at that really high level. That's probably the biggest takeaway from me going into that. You can't you can't read too deeply in it. It's three games in and still a long way to go, but they are a reliable pair of fans. And by the way, just to your earlier point there, Jake, I know you said a lot of people probably on paper would have put them around sixth or seventh. I put them fourth, and I felt that a lot of that was built off the fact that there are international standard players in this team who we maybe had question marks. Could they adapt to A-League level? I think when you look at Nando Pineker and Howison and all these guys who have been playing, you know, OFC football and playing the occasional friendly for New Zealand, that skill has adapted very, very easily to playing at a high A-League level. So, yeah, I just think that so as long as they keep doing what they're doing, they are comfortably going to be a top four team.
Matt, did you have a separate takeaway from round three?
Look, I guess our next segment will probably be the big thing I want to unbundle. But yeah. I can't really shake this feeling of the Mariners. Like, what's going on? You know,
he's doing it again, man. You're doing it.
Have we even remotely seen, you know, that caliber of the Mariners in any semblance in these games? I mean, they've just come off the back of the Champions League is something else. And by the way, in the Champions League, not even been that good. But to go two consecutive, you know, poor draws where they've looked totally uninspired against Perth and Adelaide, tell me that is not a huge red flag. And again, when we talk about the impact of the Champions League, now, unfortunately, I've not caught the game tonight, so I wouldn't even dare comment on it. But the stress that is giving Mark Jackson, knowing that he actually has had to go above and beyond the level that he didn't even really conceptualize, where, you know, I was talking on another program with a friend of ours in the FPF community last night about that famous victory that the Wanderers had in 2014. And something I said at the time was about the fact that, like, one thing that really was a gear for success is that every player in that squad that went and did what they did, the longer they went on to do it, the more experience they got where being in that adverse environment, having an understanding of how these teams played, all of that experience was already accumulated, whether it was via through the tournament itself or whether you had players who back in the mid to late 2000s, where Australian football was having quite the boom, a lot of those guys at the domestic level were playing a lot of games overseas and getting that experience. And again, when we look at this team now, okay, they did what they did in the AFC Cup, but they've had to multiply that and take it to another level. Mark Jackson really, he has not been able to conceptualize that jump up in level. And you're culminating that with what's going on at A-League level, where they're just really, really struggling to find their rhythm. And yes, it was similar to the way that round three and round, you know, the first like three, four rounds played out last season. No one's going to hide from that. And I spoke to Mark Jackson in Perth, you know, a couple of rounds in, and he was just saying that, you know, there's a huge Jason Cummings filled void that we need to replace.
I actually, right? That's what I'm thinking of this whole time is, so you, like, we're not going to talk too much about this, but you mentioned that because I remember you wrote something at the time. I think it was after the third round, I want to say, of last year. Mariners lost in Perth, I think 2-1 from memory. And Jackson, kind of after the game, was talking about, he was almost like calling out his attackers and basically saying, like, hey, can someone please step up and start scoring some goals? And if you look at these first three games in the league, you know, I think the Mariners, from a perspective, like from a control perspective, I think it's actually been okay. They haven't really given up a lot in a lot of the games, except for the Adelaide game, probably in the first half, and for periods of the victory game. But I mean, Perth, you know, Matt, I think O'Neill had a chance, but really outside of that, Faisal had...
Nathaniel Blair had a really good one at the end.
Yeah, so there were a couple of chances, but they weren't like absolute like must score sort of chances. So, and even kind of, you got the feeling from Zrilic post game that it was kind of, yeah, listen, we kind of came to defending at a point essentially and stopped the bleeding. So, I guess my perspective on them is, the apart from like the first half against Adelaide, really, where that was an extended period where I felt watching it and I was there watching it like, geez, like Adelaide are actually just playing way better than the Mariners in every single aspect. Yeah. But then after half time, the Mariners sort of got their shit together essentially, and they got control back of the game. So what I'm actually getting at here is, I think defensively, despite actually losing Sainsbury, there's not massive issues there. Again, it's the same thing which you talked about at the start of last year, where it's actually going forward, where there seems to be
some
issues. Yeah.
I don't know if the natural ingredients are there to fix it in the same way that we were talking about this same situation 12 months ago.
I
say that specifically from the point of, like, Ryan Edmondson, the more we watch him, he doesn't really strike me as someone that is actually like a dependable goal scorer. He doesn't really, like, he's actually better off playing his role a little bit differently, whether it be, you know, with another forward presence with him. I don't really know what he's like in wider areas, but if you actually tried to kind of stop, him and Kwol from playing the way that they're playing and try and rejig that up somehow, I feel like there's a better ingredient in there. But ultimately, we are talking about two guys who aren't out-and-out goal scorers. So, like, it's just one for me that I'm just completely lost on. And again, this is a guy that can work miracles, right? Like, we know what he's capable of, but I just think he's in way over his head. And he's really shocked at how this season has really thrown a lot of challenges his way that he's not known how to deal with. And again, I do like my good narrative, and I like making things very coach specific, but it's a language I can kind of talk in the sense that, like, there's a method there that has to be figured out, and it's clear to me that Mark Jackson is not found that method at all.
Well, here's one thing I'll add on that, and then I'll give my little kind of takeaway from round three. But so the Adelaide game in particular, I did not understand the way Kowal and Edmondson were being used up front together, because it was kind of like Edmondson was being used as a 10, which I'm not saying, like, he does have some technical ability, but I don't think that's really a position you want to use him in. More to the point, like, I just don't think Ali Kowal should be starting games for the Mariners at this point in time. Like, I'm not saying I'm not gonna like we are I am slowly getting to the point with Ali Kwol where it's kind of like, you know, what's going on, like, in terms of I might just be selling all sort of stock and, like, this is kind of over as a sort of guy that can go back to Europe. I just don't know. But for sure, one thing for me, which has been a little bit concerning at the start of this season, is they need to have some clarity with the strike situation. Is it Edmondson? Is it Kwol? Whoever it is, back him in. Have the other guy coming off the bench. Kind of like, that's actually one thing that Victory have done really well, even though people haven't agreed with the Fornaroli thing, is because Norbo's kind of been like every week, well, one's going to start, one's going to come off the bench, one's going to be in the stands. Like that, you know, that's kind of how it is. And that's going to be the case every single week. The structure of it is going to be the same. The personnel in the different roles is going to be different. But the Mariners need to work out if they want to play with one striker or two. And if they're going to play with one, who is going to be that striker that they're going to back in regularly? For me, it has to be Edmondson. That's my opinion. But I kind of agree with that in the sense that I'm not sure. You know, you look at last year's team, and I think they had a lot of goals coming from everywhere. You know, you had Docker, you had Nisbet, you had, right? But now you've taken some of those players out, first of all. And also now it's kind of a team which is almost built where it needs a center forward who can actually score like 10 to 15 goals. And I don't know. Well, I just don't feel they have that
It's
at
no
their disposal.
disrespect
Yeah.
to the players that are there, right? But I feel like someone like McAlmont would come to a better level if his service was to someone who could just, bag goals for fun, right? Like, I just think it is a striking problem ultimately. And when we look further down the team, I mean, I don't know that there's anyone there that can sort of pick up the mantle. Maybe it's a kind of mid-season transfer thing that they could fix. After all, there was a fair amount of rotation, in the second championship and the first under Jackson that had been won. The team did jiggle and change a lot. So it's hard. We're not sitting here, I don't think, saying that the Mariners are a lost cause, but they are maybe a lost cause in the sense that they are not going to be cream of the crop this season. They just don't look like it. And it would take a mighty effort to get them back to that level.
Bang. All right. let's cue the Mariners like beating Wellington 4-0, and it's actually Wellington who are the one who's not going to be the cream of the crop this season. No, that's actually a really interesting game this week, but we'll talk about that at the
It
end.
is.
My takeaway. I'll keep it local. I'll talk about a couple of players. This Dylan Piraeus thing with Adelaide, but particularly Dylan Piraeus and Zach Clough together for Adelaide, is a really nice combination and partnership that they've got going there in attack, and one I definitely didn't see coming. I think Dylan Piraeus is actually, you know, Kyle Viet talked about this after the Wanderers game. He's actually surprisingly, like, he's younger than what people would probably think. You know, he kind of strikes you as a guy who's been around the league for a long time and is probably, like, you know, in his late 20s, but he's only 24, for example. So he's still got room to grow. And I think with the way Adelaide play with their fullbacks, it's really suiting him at the moment. And also with their new system where they're playing with Clough in that kind of right half space as a 10, and with Piraeus just really staying high and offering that width and those forward runs, I think him and Clough have really got a nice understanding. We saw that with the fourth goal on Saturday. But yeah, I think it's kind of an unlikely partnership which has been formed. over these first few games for Adelaide, and it's looked really good. I think the also, like with their rotations, you see sometimes Piraeus will come inside and Clough will go on the outside. So they've got that kind of down pat. It's a good understanding there. And Piraeus, like, this is probably the best he's ever looked in the A-League, this sort of little stint here, to be honest. I think he had good periods at Western. Even last year with the Wanderers, he had little kind of 2-3 game runs where he would look okay, but there was never that consistency. I think he seems very settled. He seems very happy with his role. Kyle certainly seems very happy with him too. And, you know, it could be one of those things where he's just kind of found the right environment and the right team around him, and he could really kick on. So, you know, I had always kind of classed him in that sort of Milivojevic kind of Bahadur bracket of, like, guy with tons of pace, but end product is never there, and it's really frustrating to watch. But these kind of last couple of games have really sort of made me think, well, hey, if he can keep this up, then, you know, there's going to be a lot more to him as well. So, nah, fantastic he's been for Adelaide. The third goal, absolutely stunning strike as well on Saturday too. Okay, that's going to conclude sort of our takeaways and stuff from round three. So we are going to get straight into our next segment, our next part of the podcast. So new segment, I've called it Impressed or Disappointed. And we're now three rounds in to the season. And what we're going to do is myself, Jake, and Matt are each going to pick a team that we've either been impressed by or disappointed by across these opening three rounds. We'll try and avoid the teams we've just discussed kind of in the takeaways there. So, Jake, start us off again. So, which team are you either impressed by or disappointed by over the first three rounds?
Well, just to sort of go on, like you just talked about, kind of, but I had Adelaide United. I guess I can probably talk about some of the different aspects at least.
Oh, we're going to have a nice discussion here, aren't we?
Yes, I'm sure we will. But just to sort of open up though, like, firstly, I was personally at the game, the semi-final of the Australia Cup for Melbourne Victory versus Adelaide United, and finished a 1-0 win with a Jordy Valadon last-minute winner. But one of my main takeaways from that game was, wow, Adelaide, like, really impressed me. Like, it was a game where, coming into it, they didn't have a single centre-back. They had Isaias and Javi Lopez playing together. They had Ryan White starting debut, you know, as a striker. It was just very, just a bare-bones team, very, you know, like, put together, like, you know, just trying to find people to sort of play positions. And they put in a really, really good effort, really, really good performance, and honestly probably were unlucky to exit out of the cup in the way they did. Was a really impressed performance. I'm like, okay, maybe we'll see something different. Because another thing was, I thought the approach looked a little bit different for Carl Viet. I'm sure, I know Christian sort of talked about that, and we'll talk about it a bit later, but at least the way they like to set up, it was interesting to me. To sort of go on that three-back sort of system in possession that a lot of teams are starting to adopt over this season. So that impressed me. And yeah, I think we saw it into the first few games, like against the Central Coast Mariners. I thought the first half, obviously, came in 1-0 up. Lukey Vange grabbed a goal, but yeah, they really should have had more. I think that could have been a game that easily could have, you know, first half, just have a good first half, put a couple goals in, and, you know, the game's done. You know, you've won from there. But because they didn't do that, let the Mariners come back and only picked up a point from that. But that was also a very impressive performance. I'm like, okay, you know, like, yes, the second half was a bit disappointing, but there's something there. And then, you know, away at the Wanderers. Yeah, the Wanderers at the moment are looking a little bit iffy. They haven't had the greatest start to the season at all. But yeah, to go away, you know, at the Wanderers and, you know, put away four goals in the way they did, yeah, you know, maybe there's some goalkeeper, you know, mistakes. But again, like, if we keep making, you know, excuses here and there, it's like, you know, there's some consistency at least coming. So I don't know.
Sorry, did that fart noise I made when you mentioned the Wanderers come through on the mic, or?
No, it did not. Well, it's
there,
not
you go.
Me.
Did that come through then? Nah, it's no, not louder, coming through. Louder.
Because it's not true. The Wanderers will get good, but anyways, yeah. But I don't know. I've liked the way Adelaide like to play. Obviously, like you've mentioned, Piraeus is especially, I think he's a player that's very interesting in the sense that, yeah, maybe he's not an out and out winger, one that you're relying on to get consistent goals, even though he grabbed the brace just then. But you know, I think that him in that sort of right wing back type of position, you know, the ability to get forward, use his speed, yeah, he looks like it's really suited him, and he finds, you know, a good environment there. There's still some things, like, for example, Ryan Kiddo as a left centre back, I'm still not fully sold on. We'll see how that progresses over the season, as Christian just did a big, nice big face palm there. But
I just can't.
Maybe Bailey O'Neill, that's one I'm sort of interested to see. Maybe he gets a chance at a young start to keep an eye on. But I don't know. I really like the look of the of Adelaide right now. I don't think they'll actually be a contender or anything, but I think a good solid team that could cause some issues for others this season. Maybe a bit of an unexpected, a very youthful group.
Okay, so quite a few thoughts. So we were having a we were having a heated discussion over text because Jake was like getting all like, "Oh my God, how'd they look unbelievable after the Wanderers game?" And
I
I was
didn't say
kind of like,
unbelievable, but
and
I
I was
liked it a
kind of
lot.
like, "Just calm down there, champ. Just calm down, champion." Because listen, I think there's a couple. There's definitely a difference. No doubt about it with Adelaide from what we've seen the first two games from last season. I think obviously it's a shorter sample size that we've got with them compared to the other teams because they've only played two games, but their system is obviously different. They're playing now with a back three in possession. They've got wing backs. They've got tens in the half space. They're playing with a pivot with Alagic and Barnett. You've got Jovanovic is a completely different type of striker to Ibasuki last season as well. So there's a lot of things that are different. And I think it's clear that there's some early signs that Ernest Faber's sort of influence as a technical director and maybe his advice in terms of system and stuff like that has potentially been reflected in that change. I think at the end of the day, when you look at the Wanderers game, so going forward, and particularly the Mariners game in that first half, I agree with you, Jack. I thought they were really good in that first half. Going forward in possession, we know what they can be in possession at their best going forward. They can be a fantastic team. They can blow anyone out of the water. Absolutely. They've got the quality to do that. The thing is, and what they've been talking about a lot in preseason is having more control of games in terms of, and what they were kind of alluding to was not allowing transitions and not allowing themselves to be opened up in transition and conceding goals on the counterattack, which of course they did a lot last year. And you look at the game on Saturday and it's kind of like, listen, it's round two. So I'm not going to be like, oh, they're just the same team as last year. But you look at the game and you're like, well, there's two goals in particular, definitely two goals that have come from transition moments. I have to give myself a sort of a refresher of the goals again. Definitely the cry of goal for sure came from a transition central, lost the ball. Piraeus is completely out of position. Little ball into Sapsford. He goes on, cut back to cry of. The Borello goal, remind me again. Yeah, of course, the ball hit the crossbar and stuff. I'm not sure if it came from transition, but I think that one is more just like it's just bad defending, like clear the ball, you know?
Shooting
And
poorly defending,
also,
yeah.
there's massive question marks. I'm going to say, I think there's question marks over Delinov. I just don't. He hasn't been comfortable in the first couple of games from what I've seen. I think the Sabit Nour goal shouldn't have been, you know, like that ball should not be parried straight to Sabit Nour for an easy tap in the Mariners game. And then the Borello goal there, like for me, he's got to be stronger there. Like I just think he has to claim that, for example. So, you know, that's one area I think you got to remember with Adelaide. You're going from what Joe Gauchi for half the season last year to James Delianoff. Of course, it's going to be slightly less, but I feel, and I think there are some other people who feel this, that Ethan Cox, like that spot is still, it's not like totally locked in with Delianoff. So there's one thing there, but like they haven't had Bart Vereens, which is something which has just been kind of a little bit unfortunate. He's definitely not pleased that he hasn't been fit. He's definitely working really hard to be fit. And it's just been these little sort of setbacks. I think, though, when he comes in, it's going to be interesting to see if they are better at kind of getting that line right and the transition stuff. But my thing is, you know, you can't just, and this is my criticism is, and what I'm kind of flagging with Adelaide early is you can't just kind of change a system to a 3-4-3 because, you know, when you play with a 3-4-3, when you have the ball, you're always going to have three and two behind the ball. So you're always going to have three center backs and two holding midfielders behind the ball more often than not. So when you lose the ball, you've got five back as a counter cover. So your rest defense is stronger, right? I'm getting very sort of technical. I understand that. But if you kind of picture it out in your head, obviously that makes more sense. Okay. But it's not just about numbers. It's not just about we've got, you know, now with this system, we're going to have better rest defense in terms of numbers, of course. But it's also about principles and habits. And for me, with Adelaide on Saturday, they've just been this team for like a year now where they press for 20 minutes And then because they get tired or something, then they just drop off, they go back in their shells, and maybe it's a mental thing, and then they go back on it, and then they go back off, and then they're on and off and on and off. And what happens when they're off is because they don't press collectively, or then one player goes and presses by himself, another player goes and presses here, and it's just sort of haphazard, is then that's how those transition moments happen, because you're not stepping up together as a unit. You're leaving spaces in between the lines, excuse me, and it's really easy to play through. So when you're trying to stop transition, at least this is my understanding of it, is you want to congest the pitch as a team. And my concern with them is that they feel, well, because we've got more numbers behind the ball when we have the ball, when we lose it, we'll be able to cover the space better. Okay, but what if you lose the ball and your two sixes step up the press, but your back three doesn't step up with it? Well, then you're going to leave a massive gap between your midfield and defense. Or what if your midfield and your defense sits in, and then Jovanovic goes and presses like a headless chook, and same with a UB and same with Zach Clough. I'm just using some examples. All of a sudden, it's going to be really easy to bypass the first line and play into midfield. So, you know, I've seen this team a lot, so I'm probably talking a little bit more advanced with them and technical than some other teams, but that's something I'm flagging, because I just think if they feel, and you know, I just feel like they're going to play this sort of 3-4-3 all year, and they feel that naturally they'll get better at kind of dealing with transition, and they might, but I'm not totally sold on their ability to like just improve defensively, basically, and kind of limit transition. But that's kind of my opinion on that. But yeah, that's enough of me sort of rambling about Adelaide United. Matt, what's your sort of just brief thoughts on Adelaide United? Then we'll get into your sort of impressed or disappointed.
I think Adelaide for me are a team that are really just like stuck in a rut. Like they're not Jets or Glory or Brisbane levels of bad. And there's enough stability from who's in the team, the technical setup that Viet's, you know, got them playing under, where they can kind of be flattered by a game like what we kind of saw on the weekend, where I think it does kind of paper through the cracks, but it also just kind of puts them where or whereabouts you'd expect them to be, right? Like a comfortable kind of middle tier team where they're going to be good on certain days, but they're really not going to be like good and competitive in the longer term. Adelaide are a team for me that right now are just in a bit of football limbo. Like they just exist, and I think that the breakout of someone like Ayubi's like the high point of what's going on with the club at the moment. But you know, I feel like the Kyle Viet era is become so mid, and I know what it's like being around you guys as Adelaide fans for a while now, where it's just like
not an Adelaide fan. Just clarifying for the podcast. Anyway, keep going.
Yeah, but I think a lot of it really just is just this like overwhelmed sensation of okay, like that happened. We're doing this now. This is the way things are going. And it's a very very weird place to be, because I remember, you know, closer going back a few years to kind of the start of Carl Viet's reign, they were a team that you could probably rely on to be comfortably in the top six, if not challenging the top four. The culmination of it was the two-legged semi-final they had against the Mariners in 22-23, and I don't think they've really been the same team since.
Well, they're basically, look, if you want to get to nuts and bolts on it, they haven't been the same team since Craig Goodwin left, obviously, which any team in this league, if you lose a player of that quality, is going to be worse off. I think the thing is, Matt, I think you're right in the sense that they definitely are in limbo as a team, in terms of you're not sure, like, hey, is this going to be the same as last year? Or there's also the flip side where you look at Clough, you look at Aligic, you look at Barnett, Ayubi, Prius's form at the moment, Jovanovic is scoring goals. Like, you look at all these guys. One thing Adelaide do have, and I've always liked when I watch them, is they got a lot of technical quality. So at least when on the ball, you know that they're going to be a team which tries to have 60%. I mean, they had 61% of the ball against the Mariners. They had on the weekend, they had they actually ended up with 46% because the Wanderers really battled back in the second half. But in that first half, it would have been definitely in the kind of 60 range for sure for Adelaide. Actually, I can get it. I just realized I didn't get it here. They had 56% in the first half of the ball. So we know possession is like almost like the yardstick to judge them on. If they're dominating the ball in a game, then you feel like they're on the right track and they're going to be doing that. I think the problem is at the moment they're in that spot where they can play a really nice brand and they can be an attacking team. And Carl Veer has done a good job of establishing that identity for sure over his time there. But now they're missing like those crown jewel type players, and they're waiting for kind of those next ones to emerge, where it's kind of like you can have a performance where you can have 65% of the ball and have, you know, 15 shots, 9 on target, whatever, and then come out of it like only scoring once or something like that. Or the flip side is you score a bunch of goals, but then you leave the back door open and you concede a bunch too. And they're kind of like not in between. Like if they win game, like I'm at the point with them where it's like if they win a game 2-0 and it's like a comfortable 2-0, it's like, whoa, like, wow, that's an impressive result for Adelaide. You know, that's kind of what it's like a little bit with them. But in saying that, they're always, you know, and Antonis Pagonis, of course, at FPF, you know, he's mentioned this quite a bit, in that internal growth is almost their best barometer. Like if Jovanovic ends up being a 15-20 goal season striker right now, then that kind of lifts their ceiling big time, you know.
It's not something that is sustainable.
No, but it's not something that you would bank on, of course. Yeah, that's right. So, but you think, well, I mean, if Nestori and Kunda emerges like that, then what's to say that someone else won't? Adelaide United, of course. And you look at how many players they've exported, of course. But someone like a Bart Vereens, yeah, it's going to be interesting when he comes in, because if he is actually like an elite foreign player that can bring that class defensively, then that can kind of change their ceiling a little bit. Yeah. Okay, Matt, impressed or disappointed? I have a feeling I know maybe which team you're going to talk about. Yep. Who is it's a Brisbane?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And there's just so look, obviously it's hard not to have a big takeaway be the off-field stuff. And as much as, don't get me wrong, I am riled up to talk about Brisbane Roar off-field for the past like 2 or 3 years now. But what actually really gets me with this team, right, is the fact that Ruben has essentially tried to just immediately pluck someone like an Anthony Burke Gilroy or a Keegan Jelicic and just be like, oh yeah, you're just going to be the version of yourself that you were in Perth 3 years ago. Trying to implement that in this system, in this team, is just daft. It's just, and there's something else that really gets me with Brisbane as well, is pay attention to the bench that they had against Sydney. It's kind of really baffling, okay? This is a team that had Florin Berenguer, Jack Hingert, Raphael Struik, and Quinn McNichol sitting on the bench. I don't know about you, but I just feel like there is some untapped potential there sitting on the wings when you've got, you know, Ben Halloran, who's looked out of place. I mean, Shaw and O'Neill are going to probably have their place in the team because there's no real like-for-like there. In terms of some of the younger talent, though, I mean, Burt Gilroy is someone that we kind of regard as like...
O'Shea, you meant O'Shea, not O'Neill. Anyway, yeah. Yeah, I was about to say, like, wait, Brendan O'Neill plays for Perth. I'm so confused.
I was thinking about defensive midfielders and it just slipped out. Anyway, but Gilroy is someone that, like, he's no spring chicken, yeah? The guy has spent a bit of his career in the US. He was already kind of old when he had his breakout at Perth. I'm thinking he's on the better part of being, like, 26, 27, maybe even 28.
Yeah, 27.
Yeah, he's 27 years old, right? No spring chicken. I mean... There's nothing going on in this squad. There is just absolutely nothing.
This is the thing. It's actually it's kind of what I think about the Wanderers a little bit too, but a little bit less. I think that's a little bit harsh on the Wanderers
I mean, the thing with the Wanderers is, right, there's a lot of interchangeable names and there's a lot of experienced heads that aren't standing up. I think it's fair to say that with Brisbane, the experienced players that are there, you know, it's pretty obvious what their roles are, and it's pretty obvious the kind of minutes that they're going to put in. Okay, we can laugh about someone like a Ben Warland. We can argue that, you know, Ben Hallerman's really not delivered on his role there.
No, so
Corey Brown is a total liability at wingback, right? We can have that conversation. But when you've got someone like, you know, when you've got guys like Berenguer and Jack Hingert who can probably make that defense a little bit more solid, or, you know, Berenguer from an attacking sense, I mean, he assisted one of the goals, if I'm not mistaken. Like, I just feel like the way that this entire squad on paper, and don't get me wrong, it's a dire squad. It is not a top six squad.
Yeah, no, so that's what I wanted to
be used better.
Yeah, no, but that's what I wanted to get into was like Brisbane are like one of the Brisbane's like that, you know, shiny new toy you get where it's kind of like, oh, like this is interesting, maybe. And then you're like, you actually start playing with the toy and using it, and it's like, yeah, this is actually pretty average and kind of shit. And like, I'm sorry, but like you look closely at the squad. And it's kind of like Matt's right. Like there is some untapped potential for sure. Like obviously there's Waddingham, obviously there's Macklin Freak.
Quinn McNichol, Quinny Ester. He is one of the hottest talents in all of Australian football, being wasted to rot on the bench, you know? Like,
he's 16. Like,
Matt's like, I don't care if he's 16. Like, I want him starting every week.
But on that though, it's like, for example, on the bench, for me, Hingett is probably a little bit past it now, and I probably would prefer to see Harry van der Sar play over him, at least at this point, a young player.
Well, Van der Sar's been starting.
No. As in Jack was saying, that instead of Kinga being on the bench, for example, he'd come into the starting 11.
I'm
not sure about that. But
yeah.
And then, for example, Berengay, I believe he's coming back from injury. I think that was the talk there. So he's someone that will come back. But
Berengay could start this weekend against Victory. I could see that.
And he definitely should. But I don't know. But for me, it's like it's a swap. They've got some good, solid depth here and there. But yeah, I don't know. I just don't really think there's a lot to work with, to be honest. But
I think the big high point, right? If I were to talk about what the redeeming qualities are for Ruben Zadkovich's Brisbane Roar, the breakout and the career of Thomas Waddingham is an undoubted high point. Yeah. Raphael Struik, if they can get him playing, like I don't give a fuck about the metrics. Like he as the experiment of what it's like to bring someone from that part of Asia into the A League, it will work. We just have to give him time, and we have to give him, you know, a spot that he can make his own in the team. And something tells me that he's kind of, Ruben's just being a little bit reluctant with him because he's too dependent on the system that he currently has. He is going to run Keegan Jelicic into the fucking ground, just expecting him to be the same Keegan Jelicic that rocked up to those nights at Massive.
That is true. That is
dominated true. Everyone in his wake. It's like, that was actually the better part of like 2-3 years ago at this point. Like you can't expect that level of performance from someone who, you know, has had a failed stint in Belgium. He's trying to come back to kind of get his career on track, and you're just copy pasting the same formula and over again. It's not going to do anything.
Well, there's a couple of things there. So they didn't have a Costa on Friday, and Zadkovich actually, like, he kind of went out of his way when he was asked about kind of like the attacking sort of lineup, like, have you kind of settled on your best attack sort of positions and things like that? And he actually went out of his way. The first thing he mentioned was, well, we didn't have Nacer Acosta today. And I know what he means. What he's saying is, like, he's our best attacker. And I only saw that guy for one game against Auckland. But if Zadkovich is also talking like that, then he's obviously seeing a lot more, of course, on the training ground. Like, this guy is good. So I'm going to be intrigued to see if I think it's a hamstring. I really hope he's not going to be out for too long. But he's like an X factor that you could be like, hey, maybe that's someone with that foreign sort of experience. But he's also young, Acosta too. So
21.
Yeah. Like, you know, you wouldn't want to be like, hey, here's the keys to the team now, Nacer. Like, go and like win games for us. Like, he's 21. So even if he is a foreigner, he is 21. There's that. And also even Struik, like, he's young too. So there's even those foreigners. I mean, Fakranis as well, who hasn't played yet, the American defender, also young Jake, if I'm not mistaken.
He's also someone that's going to fill the gaps with a lot of these veterans as well. You know, I just, Ben Warland has not put a single good performance in a roster. Okay, it's been two games, but here's the thing, right?
Is because they've basically, like, I'm sorry, they've hoarded, apart from Van der Sar, they've hoarded Adelaide rejects. Like, that's. Like, I'm sorry to be blunt, but that's the reality. Like, Ben Warland, like, there's a reason why Adelaide were more than happy to see the back of Ben Warland than Ben Halloran. Like, Ben Halloran, listen, I was telling myself this today, maybe don't say this on the podcast, but he's been that bad in these first couple of games. I'll say it. That guy's closer to NPL level than he is A-League level at the moment. That's not even a joke. He has been shocking in the first two games. And it's not so much, and the reason I'm getting angry about it, is it's kind of like, you are 32 years old. You have had experience playing in Germany, playing in Korea. You've played at a top level, and you've had great seasons as well, particularly in Korea, where he did really well. And it's kind of like, you're now back in your home state in Queensland. Like, can you show up? Because, you know, you've got not a lot around you, and they kind of need you to be that leader in that attacking line. So, like, hey, show up. Like, it's really annoying to the point where it's like, he doesn't want to beat a player. He doesn't want to even take the game on. It's like, you are the experienced head. You need to turn up for this team to be successful. Simple as that. So, haven't been happy with him at all.
An observation I want to make on Friday night is that, like, even the things that went right for them, I felt were very much a case of like a classic kind of high scoring A-League game where it stops being about the structure and starts being about kind of the chaos of the moment. And the fact of the matter was, when you kind of take away what did go right, it is actually really hard in their current state, injuries permitting, you know, whatever else, it is actually really hard to see that team ticking in any way and really taking away what is redeemable about the way that they're looking to go, you know, forward in the immediate future. I can't pick it out. And okay, maybe some of these players do come back in, maybe some of them are better utilized, but I just think that there's just something there that is really just going to continue to irk them. And again, I know, look, I'm cheating by kind of talking about this with regards to the fact that we want to keep it within this season. We want to keep it within the last three rounds, right? But I think it's fair to say that Ruben Zagovic at Perth Glory, there was an identity, there was a culture, and there was a team that, you know, for the better part of that season at Macedonia Park, they were sitting 7th, 8th. They were just outside the brim of being a top 6 team, okay? So that proves Ruben Zagovic has...
Honestly, can I say, I think a lot of people are... Like, I don't think Zagovic, like, just purely tactically and as a coach, is really that bad, to be honest with you at all. But I think he's actually decent.
Here's the thing. Since he's gone to Brisbane, you know, I actually run the numbers on this one, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the calendar year, they've only won 3, maybe 4 games. Yes. And they lost the game 8-1 to City. You know, they just, and it's just consistently the same kind of thing where they show a glimpse of promise and just nothing is happening after the fact. And I don't actually know what the long-term plan is, purely from an on-field perspective, let alone all the other externals going around them.
Well, there's a lot of, like, clearly, like, they obviously, I mean, like the rest of the league, they've obviously gone younger. But they are, you know, actually, I mentioned the Wanderers. The easy comparison here is Western. They're really similar, in my opinion, because it's a lot of guys who are, I just don't see any upside in terms of, like, Ben Warland. Okay, like, I don't know, like you mentioned, Matt, we can make all the jokes about Ben Warland's been horrible, this, that, and the other. But in all seriousness, like, what's the upside with a signing like that? Like, he's not, you know, like, at best case, he's a squad player. Like, that's the reality. So with someone like that, and the depth is, like, it's more or less non-existent, even if it's there, right? And it's also, but then the other thing is, they might have a few good youngsters here, but if there is a criticism of Ruben, is it's like, is he going to give that young talent enough opportunity? Because there's someone like, you know, we mentioned these guys a few weeks ago when we were doing, like, in kind of the opening part of the podcast, like Brissette and Pearson Casawaya, for example. Jake could probably know more about those two than me. But those are guys from Sydney FC's academy. Now, if we're going based on just purely track record of Sydney FC's academy, like, there's a high chance that they're probably going to be decent, you know? So maybe we could see them at some point just to change things up. Like, what they need is just another X factor, something different. Now, that could be Acosta, who I've mentioned. Seeing him again, wadding him, just going up another level, and that could be enough to just make them a really interesting team, for sure.
Stroik more in games?
Yeah, Stroik. But the problem is, too, with that, it's a little bit of an interesting scenario where it seems Zakovic only wants to play with one striker. So, okay, it's going to be kind of a hit out between Waddingham and Stroik every week.
I would feel like Stroik could actually... Depending on how the formation sets up, Stroik could actually play out wide.
Yeah, maybe he could. Maybe he could play out wide. Yeah, that's true. But then you look at like the Zabalas, the Zimmerinos, the Coletti's, Scott Neville. Like, it's just kind of like, what's the upside, like, with some of these guys?
Yeah, you know? I know. And even
More the point where it's like, it just feels like they've just been given a contract because it's like, we need to feel like a squad quota. Like, that's honestly what it feels like.
I know.
I'm not, you know... Like, I don't know anything about how Brisbane are approaching their recruitment. You know, I'm not going on any information like that. I'm just saying how it feels from an outsider looking in. And it's hardly inspiring, and particularly not inspiring when you look at the state of Suncorp, for example, on Friday, which, you know, we don't have time to get into all of that. But
even like the leadership group, right? O'Shea is someone that has, like, literally been in the league for so long that he is, like, he's an Australian citizen now, right? So he's one of those guys that's just stayed for the lifestyle. And his leadership in a moment like that, you know, I just think he's not really, like, overly determined and someone that looks like a real fucking character for that team.
Yeah, like a real vocal sort of leader.
Yeah. The type of person that can, like, hold the team accountable and kick him up the ass.
Yeah.
Corey Brown is a Brisbane Roar through and through. total legend of the A-League, total legend of the club. He's a fucking liability in that team. Like, I don't think he's really offering a whole lot. And especially in terms of, like, him being a leader in that team. You know, he's had his fair shake of controversial moments throughout the years as well. Like, I'm just at a complete loss to kind of look at it and be like, there's something that I can actually see clicking together for Brisbane outside of Acosta, who's a foreigner, Stroik, who's a foreigner, Quinn McNichol, who's a teenager, and Waddingham, who, you know, is probably going to be getting a move elsewhere at some point, right? Like, it really, really concerns me. And you know, where this is going. They haven't been good since Warren Moon.
Were they good with Warren Moon? Oh, you mean because they made the finals that year? Oh, yeah, of course.
Yep.
Well, it actually
is how I started my career. It is how I started my career at FPF. I will fucking die on that hill.
to be fair, like, for any kind of, like, Warren Moon believers, guys who still have Warren Moon stock, like Matt, you could also, like, just be like, hey, you know, since Warren Moon left, it's just been shit. So, you know, hey, at least they were half decent. But yeah, Jake, last thoughts on Brisbane.
Yeah, no, I think good points made already. I think, yeah, they're in a little bit of a weird spot. They're sort of, yeah, like, they have that imbalance maybe in a little bit of their squad, but they have a lot of really good, like, promising young players, and they just have a lot of average that is sort of there, slightly more experience, and you're sort of banking on, yeah, maybe your young players having a big season. Like, for example, at Waddingham, you know, I think we all know he has the potential to be a top goal scorer, but, you know, you're banking on a 19-year-old to really lead your line. It's a little bit unsustainable in that sense. So, yeah, but, like, I think realistically, I tip Brisbane to finish bottom this season. I think they're going to finish bottom this season. I just don't see it. I think they're just going to be a team that just sort of dawdles along, maybe here and there get a nice win. But yeah, but I think ultimately they're probably just hoping to, okay, can we develop Waddingham this season? Can we develop some of these guys and sell them on? Which, look, you know, like, I think from a business standpoint, makes some sense. But, you know, maybe if you're looking at fan engagement, sort of having fans, you know, wanting to come watch your games, I don't know.
I reckon the Den would be ecstatic with a wooden spoon, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
I reckon they'd love it. I had the bottom two, and I gotta say I'm feeling pretty good about it after the first couple of games. All right. So Jake, impressed with Adelaide, Matt, disappointed with Brisbane. I'm gonna go with Brisbane's opponents this weekend. Impressed with Melbourne victory. I tell you, I'm just gonna start it. I was really impressed with Melbourne victory yesterday against MacArthur. I thought they were fantastic. And I think it was actually, maybe some victory fans might disagree with this, but I actually thought they were more impressive on Sunday, than they were in the derby in many respects. Because I actually felt like, obviously the derby is, from a results standpoint, of course, like any victory fan would say, like, that was more meaningful, the manner of it going 3-0 up in 25 minutes. But for me yesterday, and I got to shout out our boy Caden Foley here, because he wrote a really good piece about Reno Piscopo's reemergence, and how Patrick Osnorbo is kind of getting the best out of him in this new system that Victoria are deploying. But yesterday, he mentioned that at the start of the article, but yesterday what really caught my eye about Victoria, and this is why I think, you know, Jake, you put them top when we did the predictions and stuff, and I'm kind of like, I think I might take some of that action now, because, like, what's interesting is there's a commitment now to how they want to play. There's a commitment to the Kosnorbo way, right? And with a manager like Kosnorbo, if he gets the buy-in early, and then the buy-in grows and grows and grows, like, this team is definitely going to win the premiership. Like, irrespective, in a way, almost, of kind of where Sydney are at. Also, because I think Sydney, there's injury concerns, and there's kind of the depth concerns, I guess, with them a little bit too. Like Jake, you've mentioned before about their defense, for example. But I think with victory, if they are able to churn out that sort of performance on a weekly basis where they are committed to their attacking style, regardless of what happens in the game, because that game yesterday, I keep saying yesterday because I think because we usually record on a Monday, that's why. But that game on Sunday against MacArthur was, like, almost to a T. That first 60 minutes was like the Australia Cup final. Like, it was literally uncanny. It was like, wow, this is literally, MacArthur are going to do the exact same thing. They're literally going to shithouse their way to a 1-0 win, like, kind of ride the wave of victory chances, get a nice goal, which they did. They scored a really nice goal with Yaklis and German, and then kind of see it out from there and get the result. But victory, after the goal, they didn't change at all. They just kind of kept playing. They kept going. They kept going. They kept pressing. And sooner or later, before the penalty, like, there was a good 5 minutes leading up where you felt like they are definitely scoring this game. There's no way. Like, this is ridiculous. They're totally in control. And then they got the penalty. For me, it was a penalty, the handball from Walter Scott. Great penalty by Arzani. And then obviously they get, you know, they get the moment of individual brilliance from Piscopo. And that's kind of, you immerse the potential playing style, this aggressive, non-stop, in-your-face, high-pressing, attacking, possession-based that Kastorbo can get out of his teams, with the fact that Victory also have some pretty fucking good players in their attacking third, and you can really get a team here that could get 50-plus points for sure, like easily. So for me, yeah, I was really, really impressed. And I think, yeah, maybe sort of reconsider some things in terms of the premiership, to be honest with you. And the other thing is, like, you know, now they've got Piscopo exactly where they want him. He is found a role. He's fit. He's playing with confidence again. They've got Virgos, who I think is really good. Maybe each week it might not show in terms of goals, but I think his movement, his commitment again to leading the press is really good. And then they've got this Arzani sort of at the moment, who's just being used as this weapon off the bench that, hey, if we need to change the game, we'll just do it by bringing on Arzani. So Jason Gary is also the best defender in the league. I just wanted to go on record with that. I don't really care who else is in that conversation. Like, he just is. He just is the best defender in the league. He is unbelievable, that guy, at the moment. He is at the top of his game. Fantastic. Again, brilliant on the weekend. So, yeah, Melbourne Victory. My team, I'm very impressed with. Jake, you watch a lot of Melbourne Victory. What do you reckon?
Yeah. Like I said, well, like you mentioned, sorry, that was the team I did predict to win the league this season. And a big aspect of that is just simply Patrick Kisnorbo. I'm, you know, full stock in him. I think he's excellent coach. And the way he likes to play football, I just love it. I love it. I love the way that Victory are playing at the moment. It's lovely to watch. And yeah, look, I think it's the thing where, yeah, we saw in the Australia Cup final, they took the loss and it was just a tough game for them. Like, they created the chances. Curto had a ridiculously good performance. You know, MacArthur scored almost on one attack and, you know, the game's gone. You know what I mean? Like, they lose the game. And, you know, you game's hope gone. That the game's gone. But
utter work nonsense.
Well, honestly, yes.
It's the first utter woke nonsense that's been dropped on the podcast. Anyway, Jake, you were saying.
The woke, beautiful football. Get out of here. Just long football, long balls. But yeah, no, look, he's started to find his feet really at Victory. He's sort of really starting to establish those principles. It'll be interesting to see sort of how it goes in terms of maintaining relationships with players. Obviously, we've seen with Arzani, Fornaroli, even likes of Adama Traore, who, you know, once went from a really experienced, consistent player to not even playing now. So it's going to be just to see how he balances those sort of personalities. But look, if you look at how they're playing, yeah, I don't know. They look a very, very good team to beat. And yeah, I'm really interested to see how they go against Brisbane, because that should be, like, sort of on paper, you're thinking a big, big win there for Victory and maybe a bit of a wake-up call for Brisbane Roar.
Well, that's one of those games where it's like, if Victory are, like, the team on their game, maybe and me think they are, like, if they go out there and win 4-0 when it's, like, totally dominant, it's like, whoa, okay. Like, this is actually, like, a monster starting to be created here. I think... Who did you mention there? You mentioned, oh, like the players who aren't playing. So Traore, Fornaroli, and this stuff. I think with Kosnorbo's approach, it's risk reward, right? So if you do that where you're like, hey, Bruno, you know, you're on the pine essentially. Traore, we're going with Casey Boss. He's the future. Sorry. And this sort of thing where you're basically taking big personalities out of the team. I think a lot of people, they look at that and they go like, whoa, like, oh, what are you doing? Like, that is completely... like a total no-go. A lot of A-League coaches will just play like the senior guys in most spots. They will just kind of trust the guys who have been a part of the furniture for a lot of seasons. And that's fine. No worries. If you get results in particular, then that's fine. If you don't, maybe do something different. But Kastorbo's the type where it's like, he comes in and I don't think he looks at like how many appearances you've made, what your experience level is. It's what are you as a player? Do you suit a system I want to play? Do you suit my style of football? And if you don't, well, it's going to be hard for you to get minutes. You still can work hard to get those minutes, but it's going to be harder. And I have my principles. I have my way of playing. I have plan A, and every week I'm just making plan A better. And it's as simple as that. The downside of that is if Victory were to go on a bad run, go on a little bit of a skid and hit a bad run of form, well, then all those issues are going to get amplified. It's going to be like, hey, Virgos has gone five games without scoring. Why the fuck isn't Fornaroli playing? And the media and everyone's just going to kind of come back to that. But at the moment, he's winning. So it's not going to be mentioned, right? So, and that's the key, I think, for a style that he takes on. And at the moment, I'm total agreeance with you, Jack. I think I love the way he approaches it. I think it's the potential of it. You know, Melbourne Victory, it's really interesting. Melbourne Victory fans, you think of last season, like with Popovich, after almost every result, it was like, oh my God, same shit again. It's boring. We're not punishing teams and stuff. It's like, listen, if you want a coach that can get a team to punish teams and like actually crush them every week, like Kusnorbo's the guy. And that's kind of why when the initial reaction, I understood it, was like, ex-Melbourne City, fuck off, get out of here. But also it's like, yes, but did you notice those Melbourne City teams over that three-year period and how utterly dominant they were? Like, he could literally turn you into that. Like, think about the upside. So, and at the moment, I think the upside could be really, really high. Matt, give us a minute or so on, maybe not a minute, just give us your thoughts on Victory.
I think it's again, probably one of those ones where, much like with Auckland, I think the one thing you can bank on with Victory is consistency. But where that differs from Auckland is that you do get more assertion, right? And you have probably less.
I think they can be dominant, whereas Auckland, you're not sure if they can.
Yeah, well, that, in that sense, assertive as well. But I also just think that the quality on the pitch makes a real big difference, right? Struggling to kind of think of a name who is a little bit more out of the box in that sense, and that you guys haven't really spoken about, but. For me, it's just it's a clear establishment of what a top team at the A-League level should be, and I have no doubt that coming up against Brisbane, you'd almost feel uncomfortable tipping it as one that's going to be a dominant win purely for the fact that that's almost too simple on paper. Like, but what I could see very easily happening is one of these like bonkers, you know, like 5-4 kind of games. Simply with the fact that, you know, Brisbane will definitely want to show more fight. Depending on who's fit, they'll be a better attacking prospect as well. But that game on Saturday, I'm so intrigued about it, simply for the fact that Melbourne Victory are trending one way, Brisbane are trending the other.
Yeah. That would be unbelievable if that was like a 9-goal thriller. That's going to be featured on FPF TV. There you go. 5 o'clock Eastern on Saturday. There's a little plug there. I guess some other things with Victory. The system, Jake, just kind of tactically, I think it's like, that's the other thing with Kusnorbo that he's got right here too, is this system is really spot on for the personnel they've got. You know, I don't think there's any player playing out of position in this system that they're rocking. Like, Guerrero is perfect as a right center back. Roderick Miranda as a left center back means he gets to play kind of more on his natural side. Hamill's not asked to do too much in possession, being in the middle. Valadon and Teague might be the second coming of like Moy and Jedinak. Like, I'm not sure. Like, those two are like, honestly, Valadon's like quick rise, sudden rise in the last 12 months, even like fucking 6 months, let alone 12. Like, it's just unbelievable. This kid is like completely come out of nowhere. And him and Teague are fantastic together. Meshash, the only thing is, like, the only criticism of Victory is going to be, are they going to be reliable enough to take their chances? And that's going to come down to two players for me. I think Volupele and Meshash. Meshash needs to score more goals. Like, if Victory are going to be a championship winning team, I need to see him be clinical and take his chances. I think a lot of Victory fans probably are getting a little bit frustrated with his inability to take chances. And Nish, I think, is getting better as a finisher, but I think that's always, I mean, Kusnorbo, it's actually interesting because Popovich was always saying this last year and Kusnorbo's saying the same things. It's almost like you get two different managers saying the same things about you, then it's definitely an area that you need to improve. And that's with his end product with Nish. So it's fascinating. My main thing is they're just actually enjoyable to watch. Like, I'm actually like, I'm looking forward to watching them on, actually, I won't be able to watch them on Saturday because I'll be on the way to the LA United game. Fuck. But, you know, I'll probably watch a replay back the next day and I'll be looking forward to it because I know, like, you're going to get a team which is going to take the game on and it's got a lot of good quality players. Jake, any like last words you want to mention of Victory? Then we'll take a little break.
Yeah, I think spot on, like you said, in terms of fitting the sort of profiles, I think it works perfectly. Even like, for example, with Anish, obviously the discussion with him is end product, whatnot, which, yeah, again, he has actually improved on that as well, which is great to see. But yeah, he plays that sort of wider right role, you know, instead of sort of being this inside forward in and around the box, which, yeah, maybe doesn't sort of like, he's a very, very quick, pacey player that's very direct, very good on one-on-one situations. So having him wide right to, you know, sort of get down to the byline or even cut inside, which he's shown to do. I don't know, I think that perfectly unleashes him. Obviously, Piscopo on the other side is more, you know, playing the half spaces. Yeah, it's just perfect. But yeah, this honestly, the formula is there for a top side that should, you know, be competing for trophies this season. But yeah, let's just see. You know, if everything continues the way it's going very smoothly, or you know, maybe there will be something to shake it up. We have to see.
Okay, so Jake was impressed by Adelaide United. Okay, Matt was disappointed by Brisbane. Makes sense, and I'm impressed by Melbourne Victory. So that was our three teams we discussed today. We will try for sure different segments each week, so we can talk about different teams and kind of deep dive into them at various points. I'm definitely keen to talk about Wellington in some depth at some point. For sure, they're kind of hitting this sort of period where I'm kind of like they could go either way a little bit, I feel. But anyway, let's take a break. We've literally actually been doing this for just over an hour, so let's take a short break. Then we'll finish with look ahead to round four and do some predictions. Okay, so let's finish as we usually do by looking ahead to the next round and making some predictions. So, round four of the A-League Men's. So we start on Friday night, all times in Australian Eastern Daylight Time as well. Western Sydney Wanderers hosting the Newcastle Jets, 7:35 kickoff on Friday. I don't know why in the A-League we have these specific times of like 7:35 and not just 7:30. But anyway, Jake, let's start with you. Wanderers Jets. By the way, score prediction. So not just like Wanderers win, like if you think Wanderers win, give me like an actual score. So yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna say 1-1. I don't know. I'm not really sold on either team at the moment. I've been liking a little bit of Newcastle. Obviously had the bye, but yeah, I reckon 1-1 there.
Matt?
Well, I think we've seen an obvious kind of impression from Newcastle with that MacArthur win, where we can see their upside. But I think they're also a team where, you know, their upsides are very sparse, and that much is kind of obvious with where they're kind of looking as a team. On the other hand, with the Wanderers, is that not a team that you're really going to struggle to put faith in, you know, with their current state? And I just wonder, is it the kind of game where Stadge gets the Wanderers cooking and they look really good because of their quality of opponent? Or is it another one where, from a Newcastle perspective, they kind of, you know, really start showing their worth? And I'd struggle to see the latter happening. So I'm going to really probably just pick the Wanderers 1-0 or 2-0.
Yeah, I'm going to go Wanderers 2-1. I think this is actually a perfect sort of game for them at home against what is still an immature team in Newcastle to really bounce back and get their first win on the board. So 2-1 Wanderers. Melbourne Victory Brisbane Roar, the FPF TV feature game on Saturday, 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Jake, we've been talking about this game.
Yes.
Prediction.
Yes. Well, hopefully I'll be at this game. So I'm hoping to see a great, great, great game of football. I reckon it'll either be a victory like 4-5-0 W, or it'll be just a crazy like 3-3 chaos ball type game. I'm gonna opt for the probably 4-0 victory, I'll say.
Jesus, Matt.
Big win.
Yeah, I'm gonna go to the inverse. I'll go with some chaos, some organized chaos. You know, Kisnorbo can rack up a score. We know what a Zagovich team can do when it's on form. It's just that this Brisbane Roar team have never been on form. But look, let's just give them the benefit of the doubt.
Is the time they
Just
change
piling on, just hammering. Anyway.
Oh, mate, you win three games of football in 12 whole months. I'm you know, I'm gonna
How
be
many times
honest.
you mentioned that on this podcast? Anyway, it's extremely relevant, but yes.
Yeah, no, it is extremely relevant. But look, because Brisbane have started so poorly, this is like the game where you get up and you get a response. But that response in the wake of how well Victory have been going, and I don't really think Victory's done any travel or anything like that. Like, they've been pretty steady with their schedule to kick things off. So in that respect, yeah, I want both teams to be on song. And I'd say it almost stacks up as match of the round, but there's two fixtures here I'm looking at where I'm like, no, I don't actually think it could be considered match of the round.
Score prediction?
4-3.
4-3. Okay. Interesting. I'm gonna go Brisbane 3-1. No, I'm kidding. I'll go 2-0 victory. Only 2-0. I think. Yeah, it might be kind of like an admirable Brisbane performance where they just get beaten by a classier outfit. So 2-0 victory for me. Okay, Saturday night game, 7:35. Adelaide United, Western United. Jake, battle of the Uniteds.
True. Oh, I actually don't know. West United like have proven to be a team that can, you know, surprise some teams. I'll go 2-1 Adelaide United.
Have they?
I don't know. Like, I don't know. Like the result against Wellington, sorry, was pretty damn impressive. So I don't know. I just think they can surprise teams when they're not expecting it. But no, I'll probably say 2-1 Adelaide United. But I could see a draw. I think it'll be a close game.
Matt.
I was pretty intent on tipping a draw, but am I right in saying that Western have drawn every single game?
No. No, obviously, they lost to Melbourne City last night.
Yeah. Two draws and lost.
Right. Sorry. Okay. You know what, then? I'm comfortable to chalk that up as 3 points for Western. I think the emphasis kind of goes on there because Adelaide, we know. Kind of, you know, had that crazy game against the Wanderers, are at home. They're going to be performing pretty well. But I also actually, back to kind of Jake's point, I think if they've done what they've done against Wellington, we know that they were able to turn things around against Western Sydney. I think we're actually comfortably seeing, like, you know, a better side of Western in that they can frustrate teams and really use that to their advantage. So I'm sensing a draw, and I'm also sensing a comeback goal for Ibasuki.
Yeah, that's what I was going to mention. Ibasuki revenge game. I'll go 2-2. I think it's going to be a dumb Adelaide game. I think it's going to be one of those ones where like they're 2-0 up or 2-1 up or something like that, and then they just give away like some stupid goal and draw.
Ibasuki.
Yes. I will include that prediction. I think Ibasuki will score on his return to Coopers. And I don't know, is he mean enough to celebrate? Maybe he won't. I'm really not too sure. Seems like a pretty nice guy. But I'll go 2-2. Mariners Knicks Sunday 4 p.m. Ooh, this is a very, very interesting game. Jake.
Yes. I would say this is my round.
You're like, yes. I was like,
no,
I want your prediction, mate.
What's your prediction? Yes.
I was waiting for more. But this is personally my game of the round. I'm really, really interested in this. Two teams where you just don't know, I guess, sort of what was to come after their incredible sort of breakout seasons that no one really expected. I'm going to say Wellington, 2-1 Wellington. I've been more impressed by Wellington than I have Central Coast so far. And I think they get a little bit of a shock result here. But a draw is very, very likely here as well. I think it'll be a bit boring.
Mm-hmm. Matt?
Yeah. If an aftertaste of last season is what gets Mark Jackson's Mariners firing, that would be very, very nice indeed. I think there's still a narrative from last season that's going to linger over this one. You know, the Mariners' problems are well documented, and for everything that I did say about the Mariners earlier, they, along with Auckland, Victory, and Adelaide, are the only other undefeated team. So it is worth remembering that the Mariners still haven't actually lost, and that almost implies that they are pretty stable. But like you actually said, Christian,
that's kind of what I was getting at when we were talking about them. Yeah,
they are a stable team at the back. Of course, that kind of brings us to the whole point of, well, Wellington, they can stem teams defensively. The Mariners can stem teams defensively.
Surely the Mariners are not going to draw three of their first four games nil all. Like that would be,
that'd be pretty remarkable. And again, I know me and the Phoenix and that whole thing, definitely again very keen Phoenix to see Phoenix that game, team yeah. that team mold into something. If Marco Rojas is getting a starting berth, you know, that's a pretty exciting thing. But just for the sake of, you know, being concerned about the Mariners, I'll say that they get a 1-0 win, and I'll choose a really unlikely source. I'll go with McAlmont.
Bro's extending the podcast by like thinking of actual goal scorers. Fuck.
Alfie McAlmont, first goal.
Yep. McAlmont, first goal. Played well tonight, I felt.
Good player.
I'll go 1-1. Yeah, I actually think the Mariners are going to draw four games to start their season. Yeah, I'll go 1-1. I think Wellington pretty much a work in progress, but I think that progress will end up being positive. And I think the Mariners are really actually quite similar. So, yeah, kind of points to a draw for me. Sydney FC, MacArthur. I can't wait to predict the last game. I'm going to love this. But Sydney FC, MacArthur, Sunday night, 6 p.m. Of course, this game got moved from the Saturday initially because of Sydney's Asian commitment. So, Jake, will MacArthur bounce back? MacArthur have had two losses in a row. You know, there's a little bit of, not so sexy now, are you? But prediction, Jake.
Yeah, I really don't know what to expect from MacArthur. Like, yeah, they're going from 6-1, you know, over Perth Glory in a crazy game to, yeah, losing out at home to Newcastle. And, yeah, like, to be fair, the victory result was pretty expected. But yeah, it's another game there, away at a side that, you know, going to be dominating the ball. So it's technically the game where it's like, okay, this is the game that actually MacArthur arguably thriving. But at the same time, Sydney are Sydney. So I don't know, but I'm going to do a draw. I'm going to go draw. 1-1. I'm feeling, I think it's going to be a very drawy round. I feel like teams just want to stabilize themselves. I don't know.
Drawy.
That's just my prediction.
I mean, drawy.
That is not a word. Anyway, yes.
Well, I just made the word there.
The word drawy. But I actually, again, I actually hearken to Jake's point here in that, like, MacArthur are a team that I really value at heart. I want to see them do really well. I think what has been built there, Stojowski's growth as a manager, has actually been really, really exciting to see. But Sydney, you know, like, you can't just sit there and be like, yeah, I'll chalk this one for MacArthur, whatever. Because the same people ultimately would have done that against the Jets. And we know how that, you know, kind of ended up going. And so from that perspective, I think maybe like a 1-1 or a 2-2 is probably going to have to be the safe enough bet. So
a draw. Yeah. I think this is going to play out really similarly to MacArthur's game against Victory, in the sense that MacArthur are going to sit in, Sydney are going to have a lot of the ball. And really, if Sydney score early, I think this could get a little bit similar to the elimination final we saw when Sydney destroyed them 4-0. I will go with a Sydney victory. I think we are going to, in a week's time, be having a conversation about MacArthur not being as crash hot as maybe we thought they were. There are some slight concerns there that I'm happy to delve into at another time. But I will go I'll go with a 2-0 Sydney win. Okay, final game. 8:45, Sunday night. Perth Glory at home to Melbourne City. Jake, prediction. Yes.
All right. As much as, you know, my... break the heart of Matt, who will be after me. I honestly think they're going to get pumped. I just have that feeling.
I am the complete opposite, but keep going.
Okay, all right. Well, it'll be interesting. But City, I don't know. Like, obviously with the injuries, that's definitely a factor that's going to be interesting to see. But I personally liked how they looked against West United, considering all the factors. And I don't know. I think, especially, like, my mind just really draws back to that one game. I forgot exactly what the result was. But when Melbourne City, I think it was 3-1, something like that, and Lecky scored a nice goal. But I just always liked how City play. It just purely vibes his prediction, by the way. I just like whenever City play at Perth. I just think they always play well. So I just think it's going to happen again. So I'm going to say 3-1.
They lost there last year, though. And Nasmo? Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
I don't care, buddy. I made the prediction. 3-1 City.
Wow, made a ridiculous prediction and called me buddy on the podcast. Okay. Matt, would you like me to go, or would you like to give your prediction now?
No, I'm not going to tell Jake exactly why he's wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, because I'm going to do the same thing.
The issue is that, like, you're having a very Victorian lens on Melbourne City right now that I just am baffled by, right? This is a team that's...
He's infuriated by it. Anyway.
Well, it's... This is a team that's like got a veteran squad that's having reported injury problems, a coach that clearly is not fit to be the manager of Melbourne City, and, you know, a team that really, if you're that's Perth, true. Coming off the back of, like, you've got that clean sheet, you've fixed and stable and, you know, stabilized what a lot of those issues were. If, you know, Hamzawi cannot, you know, have his issues. Kanga really proved that he's at the level.
Kanga's good. Kanga's good. I'm fine with Kanga.
Exactly.
Yeah,
you're going to shore things up against what will actually be a younger than usual attacking force for Melbourne City. On the inverse of that, you know, they've got to get the ball forward, get it to Faisal, get it to Blair, get it to Taggart, create...
Faisal.
This was... use that original image of what just really kind of painted this team to be. And if you cast your mind back to when they last played there, it wasn't the game where an Asmo squad, it was the Cup. Round 16,
oh, yeah, of course. There's that one too. Yeah.
And Perth were clearly the better team on the night. I mean, I know it was a chaotic 9-goal game, but Perth Glory were the better team on the night. And, I give credit to whoever will be starting that game for City, but I don't really have a lot of faith in them right now. And it's exactly the kind of game where 12 months ago, Alan Sajic would have had the team geared up to really provide that shock effect. And David really should be smart enough to pick up on that. And to actually, like, you know, take the onus and actually really attack the game. You know, let's not forget the first 15, 20 minutes against Wellington, they probably were the better side. They did start out on the front foot. And that's how those night games at HBF Park usually go. So if they get out on the front foot, be comfortably tipping Perth to win this game.
Score? Make it quick. Come on.
2-1. I didn't actually really think about it. I just knew what was, you know,
2-1,
idea of what was going to happen.
I'm going to go 3-2 Perth. I think we're going to see some early signs as Rillaball. I think it's going to be... This is going to be the game where we start to see slightly what we want to see here. So Perth 3-2 for me. Okay, that's going to do it for the pod. This is the longest recording, for fuck's sake. Anyway, we'll be back. We'll be back next week, I believe. Yes, we're going to be looking ahead as well to the Socceroos, because they've obviously got Saudi Arabia and Bahrain coming up. So it's going to be a review of round 4 and a look ahead to the Socceroos. Thanks to Jake. Thanks to Matt. I'll be back, probably not with these two, next week. And until next time, it's bye for now.